This week's parsha is Parshat Vayelech. It's also Shabbat Shuvah, which means if I were really wise, I would have... Well, if I were really wise, I wouldn't have taught today. Otherwise, I would just give the Shabbat Shuvah drasha. So even though you may think that's what I'm doing, I can assure you it's not. But we will certainly have Shuvah themes in here. That will be the most of the time that we'll spend. But let's start... Beginning the parasha, Vayelech Moshe v'deber et dvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. So Moshe comes and he tells over these things. What exactly are these things? Well, immediately before that, in source two, was ha'idoti b'chem hayom et ha'shmayim et ha'aretz. I call as my witness heaven and earth. Hachayim v'mavet natati lefnecha brachu kala, and so on. Uvacharta b'chayim. Then in front of you there's a choice. The choice is life or death, the choice is blessing or curses, and God then gives us some inside information, gives us a hint, uvacharta b'chayim, and you should choose life. Now, this is a choice which goes back as far as the dawn of history, blessing and curses, life or death, and so on, and we have not always chosen the proper choice. But what's particularly interesting here is calling upon heaven and earth as the witness. And that's really what we're going to end up staying on today. Also, back into this week's parasha in Perek Lamed Aleph, in source number 3, we have L'koach et Sefer Torah Zev, V'samtim Oto Mitzad Haron Brit Hashem L'keichem V'yashtam B'chol La'ed. So over here, you're going to take this Sefer Torah that Moshe has been writing, and you're going to put it inside the Ark, and it's going to be a witness. And again, in Pasuk Kaf Chet, Hakilo Eilai Kol Zeknei Shevtechem V'Shotreichem V'Adabrei Bozneihem Et Hadvarim Ha'Eileh V'Ha'Ida Bam Et Hashmayim V'Ta'aretz. And I call upon heaven and earth as my witness. So this idea of calling upon heaven and earth as the witness is something which has repeated in the beginning of next week's parsha as well. Hazinu Shemayim V'Adaber V'Tishma Eretz Zimrifi. Listen, heaven and, you know, the earth as well. And here Rashi again brings the same idea that this is calling upon heaven and earth as the witness. If you even scan through the Rashi in source 5, you'll see that Izinu Shemayim Shani Matarebim Yisrael V'Tihu Edim B'Davar, that I'm going to ask them to be the witnesses. And Moshe says, you know, quite sadly, he says, why? Because I'm not going to be here very much longer, and we need something which is more permanent, which is going to be the witness. Shekach Amarti Lehem Shatem Tihu Edim V'Chein Tishma Ha'aretz V'Lama Id Bahem Shemayim V'Aretz. Why call upon heaven and earth? Ama Moshe Ani Basavardam L'machar Ani Met. Because, and by the way, in this case, it's really quite literal. Tomorrow, I won't be here any longer, Moshe says. And therefore, when Israel come and say, hold it, what contract? Im Yom Yisrael lo kiblu aleinu abrit, mi bao machisham. Who's going to come and give the testimony which counters this? Lefichach ha'id b'hem shemayim v'aretz. And therefore, I'm calling upon heaven and earth, edim shehim kaimim lo'olam. I'm calling them as the witness which exists forever. Now, this idea of calling upon a witness or calling upon, maybe I'll restart that, that this concept exists here towards the end of Devarim, I hope you see very clearly, because I guess if you bring three different times that it's used, that would seem to be evidence that this is a thing, not just a random occurrence. The Rambam, in the middle of his Laws of Tshuva, has a turn of phrase which I think is a very similar concept, but this is a turn of phrase which has absolutely confounded commentaries ever since, and we'll see exactly why. We're going to start in source number 6, which is the Rambam in the second chapter of Tshuva. The Rambam has 10 chapters of Tshuva. Rabbi Soloveitchik reported that his grandfather, Reb Chaim, liked to imagine that the Rambam did this deliberately to have one chapter a day during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva to study. Whether this is the case or not, I can't tell you, but ever since Rabbi Soloveitchik said that, I assume that there are many people that have taken that upon themselves. The first chapter is a chapter which deals with, more than anything else, something which I would call kapara. It serves as what I think we can call an intellectual basis of trying to take the concept of tshuva, and for that matter kapara, from the world of the Beit HaMikdash and bring it into a world where the Beit HaMikdash no longer exists. Whereby the Rambam is fully cognizant, of course, that when there was a Beit HaMikdash, many sins were, quote-unquote, taken care of in the Beit HaMikdash. What happens in the world when that doesn't exist? So the Rambam starts with the concept that everybody, even if they brought a korban, even if they brought an offering, would need to have some type of a vidui, some type of a statement of guilt, of a confession, if you will. And then he moves into the second chapter where he talks about tshuva per se, and I'll say it again, not what he spoke about the first chapter, which is really much more kapara, atonement. And therefore, once you speak of atonement, then Yom Kippur will also have a certain place in that first chapter. Here he speaks about tshuva. Source number 6. Ezui tshuva gemura. What is considered to be a complete tshuva? So the Rambam says, Ze shabali yado davar sha'avarbo, where a person is placed in the same situation where they have previously failed. Vefshar biyado lasoto. And the person has the ability to do it in terms of every single possible background to the situation. Upirash v'lo asa b'pnei tshuva. And the person stops, separates himself from the situation because of the tshuva. Now, there are a couple of things over here that one has to note, which means a person can stop doing what they're doing because of what I would call rehabilitation and not necessarily because of tshuva. And of course, then you can ask me what exactly is the difference between rehabilitation and tshuva. Well, rehabilitation primarily deals with the present moving forward. I've done something in the past. I'm stopped doing it in the past. I don't identify with the past, and now I'm doing something else, and now I've changed my behavior. Over here, this person has failed in the past, but it says he's no longer doing it because of a rejection of the past. Which is, again, not because of any other reason, because the person rejects the past. Lo miyira, not because he's afraid. Velo mikishlon koach, and not because he no longer has the physical ability. Ketzad, for example, the Rambam gives a case. And by the way, what the Rambam is telling you over here, even though he spells it out a little bit more clearly, is a one half a line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hei chidomi bal tshuva, what is about tshuva? Oto makom, oto isha, same place, same woman, in that particular sin. Ketzad. Horesha bali shava avira. If a person had an illicit relationship with a particular woman, for argument's sake, we'll claim that this was a married woman. Well, achar zman, and after some time, nityachedima, he finds himself secluded with her. Vumeidba avatoba, and he still loves or desires her. Uvakoch kufo, and he still has the same physical power. Uvid midinasha avarba, and it's in the same country where the laws, therefore, are the same. Uparash, nonetheless, he separates. Velo avar, and he doesn't sin. Zeu bal tshuva gemura. That is considered to be complete tshuva. Hu sheshlomo amar zechor parecha b'yimei bechoratecha. And that's what Shlomo Amar referred to when he said that a person should remember their Creator in the days of their youth. V'mlo shav ele b'yimei zeknuto. If a person only did tshuva when they were older, and a person no longer can even do that which they did in terms of the sin, afal pi she'enu tshuva mu'ula, even though this is not perfect tshuva, or a higher level of tshuva, mo'elatilo, it's nonetheless, it works. Ubal tshuvahu, and this person's about tshuva. Afilo var kol yamava, sa tshuva biyomitato, umeit b'tshuvato, even a person's in their entire life, and on their deathbed, this person does tshuva, but did tshuva before they died, kol avonotav nimchalim, all of the sins that he did are forgiven. Shenemar ad asher lo tach, giving a long parable from Kohelet that even, you know, as the sun is about to set and so on, which is the day of death, that's still considered tshuva. Miklal, and this therefore includes, she'im zachar baro, that if a person remembered their creator, v'shav kodem shiyamot, a person did tshuva prior to death, nislachlo, they are forgiven. So that whole description, which really is a little bit melodramatic, because the Rambam took us, as it were, into the bedroom, and the Rambam discussed their various possibilities. One possibility is that the person doesn't sin because of tshuva, and the other person doesn't sin because they couldn't do it any longer, but they still regret what they've done in the past. But I still would say that this chapter, more than this paragraph, more than anything else, is dealing with the present behavior is dictated by a rejection of the past. And over here, the Rambam, again, didn't speak about rehabilitation. Again, there was a third possibility. A person just doesn't sin because they didn't have the opportunity. That's not tshuva. The person changed their behavior from some other reason. That's not what he says. He says, not because they're afraid, not because for other reasons. No, this is all of the present behavior is dictated by a regret of the past. And if I'm overstating that, then I apologize, but I do believe that to be correct. And then in Halacha Bet, the Rambam is far less dramatic, and he puts this into clear categories. Umaya tshuva. And what is tshuva? And one sort of gets the sense that he could have began the chapter with that. What is tshuva? And then moved on to what is tshuva gemura? So it is a little strange that paragraph B or bet is not paragraph A. Umayi tshuva, what is tshuva? Hu she'azov chotei cheto. First thing about tshuva is that you stop doing that what you used to do. That means you cannot be a penitent if you're still sinning, which means a sinner and a penitent are mutually exclusive. Either you're still a sinner, or you could be somebody who's a baal tshuva. One cannot be both. Hu she'azov chotei cheto. The first element is the person needs to stop sinning. V'yasiru machshavato. And the person should eradicate the thoughts of sin from their mind. That itself is an interesting phrase. V'yigmor b'libo, and the person needs to decide in their heart, shelo yaseu od, that they will never do it again. So over here we have stopping sinning, we have the sin is no longer part of the person's inner world, and a decision, shelo yaseu od, the determination that this person says, I will not do it again. Shenema yazov rasha derko, and so on, ish oven machshavotav, that a sinful person should move away from their path. V'chein yitnachem al sha'avar, and also this person should have regret of the past. Shenemar ki achrei shuv v'nichamti. V'ya'ir alav yodea talumot, shelo yoshuv zeh hachet le'olam. And the knower of all secrets should testify that this person will never return to this sin ever. And then it brings a verse to that, for shenemar v'lo nomar od elokeinu l'maseh yadeinu, and so on. Now I want to pause here for a second, because over here we got to what I was referred to in the very beginning. Over here we have the testimony. He who knows all secrets will testify, presumably. He who knows all secrets is God. Actually, there is one verse in Psalms and Tehillim which refers to God in that, using that phrase. God is the knower of secrets. So God needs to testify that this person will never sin again. And it's there that we are confounded. And I'll explain the difficulty as we move on. But first I want to say very clearly what it is that concerns me and what it is that we're going to speak about. Today's topic is the tshuva of the recidivist. What is a recidivist? No, this is a new word. Those of you who've been in prison probably are quite familiar. A recidivist is somebody who returns back to what they've done. Most crimes, I think this is fact, are recidivist crimes. Most crimes are done by people who have done crimes before. So what happens if a person does tshuva but ends up doing the sin again? So what is it that bothers me? Well, first thing that bothers me is that there's probably a whole list of those al-chets that we come back to and we're sincere about every single year, and for good reason we're sincere, because we've done them during the year. So is there any value in the tshuva of the person who sincerely says, I'll never do it again, but does it again? So I'll say it again, the recidivist sinner, recidivist penitent, or baal tshuva, what happens to, which means, are we wasting our time in Yom Kippur? I don't mean to overstate this, but if there are certain things that again and again and again we keep coming back to, you know, the very sins that I do by speaking, the very sins that I do by Lashon Hara, and you do this year after year. So, and then, by the way, there's also one of the sins that I do by doing vidui, but vidui peh, because I've done inappropriate vidui. So now I'm apologizing for the things I apologize for that I'm going to come back and I'm going to do anyway. So is there value, or perhaps is there damage in the person who's coming and trying to do tshuva by things that they are going to do again? Let me phrase this a little differently. There's a Mishnah in Yoma towards the end that says, Echtav ashuv, echtav yashuv. If a person says, I'm going to sin and then I'm going to do tshuva, I'm going to sin and then I'm going to do tshuva, or echtav yom kippurim, you know, well, okay, it's the person who puts on their calendar in August in big red letters, sin, and then they put on their calendar in September or October, as the case may be, tshuva. So is there value in such behaviors? The Mishnah says, Echtav ashuv, echtav ashuv. The person who says, I'm going to sin, then I'll do tshuva, I'm going to sin, I'm going to do tshuva, ain ma speaking mi yadu laso tshuva. That person is unable to do tshuva. Now, the simple read of that is that doesn't work. That's completely cynical. You can't say that I am going to break this law, but then I'm going to pay the fine, as it were. It doesn't work that way with God. Tshuva needs to be on some level sincere. And if tshuva was premeditated, or if the sin was premeditated, which was predicated on the idea that you're going to do tshuva afterwards, so that doesn't work. by the way. And what happens if you do tshuva from having said echtov ashuv? What if you do tshuva from having sinned, saying I'm going to do tshuva? Can you then do tshuva? I just ask this to bother you a little bit, because then you're doing tshuva not from having been cynical about tshuva. You're doing tshuva for having been cynical about tshuva. If anything I just now said made any sense. The Rambam in his Perish Mishnayot says something which is interesting. He understands Ein Maspikin B'Yado La'asot Tshuva not as he cannot do Tshuva. And again, think of the words a little. Ein Maspikin B'Yado. So it sounds like it's as if his hands will not be able to do it. And the Rambam says, no, it's that God won't help him. There won't be sight to Dishmaya. There won't be help from above. Which itself maybe sounds like a lot less of a problem, but nonetheless, where would we be if God didn't help us? So it's saying that most people want to do tshuva, God is there helping us along the way. And in this case, God says, listen, you were cynical about tshuva, I'm not helping you, you're on your own. Now, being on your own doesn't mean you can't do it, it just means that things may not work as smoothly as you would like. And he speaks about Yom Kippur as well. It could be that Yom Kippur is not going to go easy as you would like. And, you know, every single day you feel great, and Yom Kippur you're going to wake up and you're going to feel sick. You're not going to be able to fast. You're not going to be able to go to shul. Or you're going to go to shul, and you're going to go to shul, and sitting right next to you is going to be that one person who bothers you more than anyone else in the world. Or sitting on the other side of the mechitza is that one person who you're attracted to more than anyone else in the world. So what do you say to God? Thank you? What do you say? Why today? You know, this is not the day to be doing this to me. But as I said, when you don't have sight to the Shmaya, when God is not helping you, that's not such a simple thing, especially even more if God is working a little bit against you on this. Yeah, you can do tshuva, have a good time, but don't expect any help along the way. Now, my question is actually the opposite today. It's not the mission that says, echtov ashuv, echtov ashuv, I'm going to sin, I'm going to do tshuva, I'm going to sin, I'm going to do tshuva. I'm saying the opposite. I'm going to do tshuva and I'm going to sin. I'm going to do tshuva and I'm going to sin. It's not echt of ashuv, it's ashuv echte, which means the person who says, well, maybe we'll break this down a little bit more. What is essentially the truest gesture of tshuva? And I'll give you choices. Is it that I stopped doing that what I'm doing? That's choice number one. Is it that I regret the past, or is it that I accept towards the future? Which means I can have various combinations of these things. For example, a person can accept, I will never do this again, even though they've never regretted truly what they've done in the past. And that's one of the things of this generation, is that people don't regret what they've done. I am who I am today because of all the things that I've done, and people are narcissistic enough to say that I wouldn't be me if I didn't do all the things that I've done, and therefore I don't regret anything that I've done. So what happens to the person who says, okay, that was really bad which I did, I will never do it again, so there really is true Kabbalah la'atid, but there is no sincere rejection of the past. And on the other hand, what if there is sincere rejection of the past, but there's no real, true acceptance towards the future? Now, the thing which should go back now and trouble us with this line of the Rambam, which goes back to our parsha, which goes back of calling heaven and earth as the witness, over here it says, and let's read Halacha Bet again, source 6, Halacha Bet, Umahi Atshuva, and what is Tshuva? So the first element is that the person needs to stop what they're doing. And the person needs to no longer be thinking about this. And the person needs to decide that he will never do it again, which means that's future-oriented. And also the person needs to reject the past, which means this needs to be what we would call charata. And then the knower of all secrets will testify, Shelo Yeshuv Lezeh Hachet Lolam, will testify that this person will never return to the sin again. Which then brings me back to the question that I raised. Is tshuva, according to this line in the Rambam, is it a zero-sum game? Is it one of either success or failure? Either a person never does this again, or there is no tshuva. Which means this line in the Rambam, that the knower of all secrets will testify, they'll never do it again. So, is that it? And I'll make this a little more dramatic. Let's say, for example, the individual goes through a process, person sinned, is shocked with their behavior, but has not completely rejected their behavior. Which means what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to very gently bring us into the example in Halacha Aleph. Person sinned with a particular woman, and now he finds himself alone with that same woman. Do you want me to elaborate more or to build up the story more? I can. The person goes off on a business trip and he meets this woman in a bar and he ends up in her hotel room and he's shocked about his behavior, hasn't completely rejected it yet, has not said I'll never do it again, but is embarrassed with their behavior and, you know, this isn't me, this is not the person that I want to be. And the person then finds himself in the same situation again and says, no, I will not do this again because this is just wrong. So is that person a Baal Tshuva? Which means when I go back and I read Halacha Aleph, especially the person still wants to do it, but he succeeds. He walks away. He turns around and walks away from the quote-unquote opportunity to sin again. The Rambam described that person as a Baal Tshuva Gemura. That is complete tshuva. Why? Because he was in the situation and he stood up and he didn't do it because of his new relationship with God. That is complete tshuva. Now, what's interesting about this is that he still wants to sin. It's still part of his inner world. And then I get to Halacha Bet. And Halacha Bet is somebody who has completely taken this outside of their thoughts. And this is somebody who has regretted the past. This person accepts upon themselves they're not going to do it again. And now my question is, but what happens if 5 years later the person then falls and then sins? Are you now going to say that retroactively there was never tshuva? And you're going to ask me, why am I saying that? And I'll say I'm saying that because of that problematic line here where the Ram says, because God testifies he will never do it again. So therefore, God, who knows everything, can't testify if the person 5 or 10 or 20 years later is going to do the same mistake. Does that mean that there was no tshuva? Especially in the way that I just now described it. He was in the same situation, and he walked out of the same situation. And if you want, I can even say he was in the same situation 20 more times, and he walked away from it each time because he's a Baal Tshuva. But then he fails at some point down the line. He fails. Do we now say that all those times that he walked out of the room is of no value? Do I now say that all of the tshuva that he did is of no value? And that's why I said that this line of the Rambam, which again goes back to our parasha, I'm going to take heaven and earth as my witness, I'm going to take God as my witness, I take God as my witness, creates a conundrum, which means, is this the only sense of real tshuva? Now, those who have grappled with this have gone in different directions. First, I'll mention the Sfat Emet in source number 7. He said, correct, that's real tshuva. He goes, real tshuva is if you never do it again, if God will testify. And how can God testify? And let's be honest for a moment. There's always been a problem. I'm not even going to call it an elephant in the room. It's not. There's always been a problem how to reconcile our free will and God's knowledge. God knows what we're going to do, so how do we have free will? So the answer is that God gives us free will. The one person who put this in one sentence was Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Hakol tzafui v'rashut netuna. Everything is seen, but permission is given. God knows what you're going to do, which means essentially what you really need to do to solve this problem is to come to the point that God's knowledge is outside of time, and therefore my living within time of a past, present, and future and God's knowledge in no way contradict one another. So I said that's not a very difficult issue to get to. Once one realizes that God is outside of time, so God's knowledge, God knows what I chose to do. God gives me the ability to choose. But over here in this case, that real tshuva is only in the case that God testifies I'll never do it again. So if God testifies I'll never do it again, the problem's a little bit more acute, which means that God says I'll never do it again, and that's what real tshuva is, and that I need to do tshuva to the point that I take God as my witness I'll never do it again. So does that mean that I've now come to the point that I no longer have free will? Now, that may be an illogical conclusion, it may be a logical conclusion. The Sfat Emet likes that a lot. And he goes, correct, that's what tshuva is. Tshuva is you get to the point that you no longer have free will. Now, that may be a little bit difficult, but you look at source number 7. Again, and this is on this week's Parsha, as it were, Shabbat Tshuva, and B'pasuk Tshuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha. Ki ikar tshuva kishenetala hadam achar tikun achet umechzik betshuvato. Real tshuva is a person climbs up, Shuva Hashem Ad Hashem Elokecha, you return to God completely. V'zeh shekatuv Ad Hashem Elokecha ki tzarech adam l'shuv l'mkomo rishon. Sheshorish b'nei Yisrael chukukim tachat kisei hakavod. One has to return, as it were, to the throne of God up in heaven. U'vadeh achar madrigot rabot shekfar hu tzadik amor. And this goes after many levels of the person being a complete tzadik. Adayin tzarech l'shuv liot chuzer l'shoshor elyon. Person has to return to the very core of their soul, which comes from the kisei hakavod. V'zeh shekatav shemigaat ad kisei hakavod. Uv'Rambam, and the Rambam's way of articulating this in the mind of the Sfat Emet, ad she'eid alav yodea tom l'mot, shalashuv d'var zeh. till God will testify that they'll never return. Umehatema lomar asher nikratshuva ad shia idalav to imken lo shavka chai. What person can probably live up to this example? You've not left room for anybody to exist. Achein hamuchuvanhu ki otshuvat zirich liyot ad madrigazo. He says, no, that's the aspiration. Again, he's being a little nice because he's not saying that this is the only type of tshuva. He says that's the aspiration of tshuva. And he writes, v'hainu bitul habechira legamrei ki bevadei tzadikim zochim ba'avodatam ad shenikach mehem kim'at kol habechira. So, of course, the Sfat Emet as a Hasidic Rebbe, now he also knew how to learn. I hope that didn't sound too condescending, but Sfat Emet was one of the exceptional thinkers of the 19th century. And he says over here that the aspiration of tshuva is to get to the point that you have removed your free will. You no longer have free will, and therefore, what's the expression of this, you no longer have free will? That God testifies that you'll never do this again. So he's not bothered by this line and my interpretation of this line in the more extreme way, because he says, of course, that's what tshuva is. Tshuva is a person who we're given free will and we're given choices, and some of those choices should be seen by us as not choices. That's not a choice. That is not something which is acceptable. That is not something which is possible. And therefore, within our inner world, we need to get to the point that we no longer have free will. And therefore, as I said, it's not just that he's not troubled by this. He thinks that that's what a person should get to. And he also said, you noted in passing, that's the level that the real tzaddikim get to, or almost get to. And that's what the real tzaddik is at the point, that he no longer has free will. Now, of course, there are things that you can question him about over here. For example, we're told the greater the person, the greater the yetzer hara, and so on. But he's saying, no, the objective is to have no yetzer hara whatsoever, to have it removed. The one who actually formulated this as a question, not as a conclusion, is one of the commentaries on the Rambam in source number 8, the Lecha Mishnah. Umaya tshuva she'ezov achotei ve'id alav yodea ta'alumot ve'im tomar eicha kodesh baruch hu ya'id alav kach v'kach lo nishar ha'bechiru b'yado. If God actually testifies the person never will do this again, then the person no longer has free will. So you'll note that the Lecha Mishnah, again, who's way earlier than the Sfat Emet, raises this as a question, and he sees this as quite perplexing. How could it possibly be that we no longer have free will? Of course we have free will. We always have free will. But how could part of the formula of tshuva be the idea that I need to call God as the witness? And again, God is a witness who knows everything. So I'm saying again, this is further than the problem of how do I have free will if God knows the future. Here I'm calling upon God to testify I'll never do it again. So he's saying, if that's the case, if God really will testify this on this point, and I've succeeded in doing tshuva, then I lost my free will, and how can this possibly be? So that's the question of Lecha Mishnah, and he actually moves away from it, because he's bothered by the question, and he thinks that this is not really a viable approach, and he writes instead, V'yishlomer d'perisho kach, she'b'shah she'u osa tshuva, tzerich she'yikabel of la'ev, la'ed la'ashem yitbarach, she'lo yishuv l'zeh achet lo'lam, v'od derech va'ida li'et ha'shemayim v'et ha'aretz. We're right back to this week's parasha. He says, no, rather when a person does tshuva, it's not that God testifies, it's that a person should bring God as their witness. A person should say, It's a vow. You should bring God as their witness, which really then is not an expression of what the reality of the future holds, but is more more an expression perhaps about how the person feels right now. Which means I am so sincere right now that I swear by God I will not do this thing again. So therefore, that's a level of sincerity. Now, again, we have to admit, there are certain people who waffle on Yom Kippur. That doesn't mean they eat waffles, but they waffle on Yom Kippur. Do I really want to go that far? Do I really want to say I'm never going to do it again? I mean, there is regret, and they want to be forgiven, and they want atonement. But this, when a person gets up and makes that statement, that I take God as my witness, I will not do it again. So that solves the problem in terms of the free will. You still have free will. In fact, you may have just now added another sin to your repertoire when you say that God is my witness, I won't do it again, and then you in fact do it again. This does not stop you from doing this, but this, if anything, is an expression of the person's sincerity. So that's the way the Lecha Mishnah ends up going. There's actually a fascinating source, which is number 9, which is the Sefer Chasidim. The reason why this is fascinating is that it's word for word the Rambam. And the reason why that's fascinating, because Yehuda Chassid lived at the exact same time as the Rambam. And I don't know if the Rambam's writings spread all the way to Germany at that time, that Yehuda HaChassid, when he was writing his book, said, oh, that's really good. Let me lift that, because no one's going to know. And he lifted two chapters of the Rambam, and he stuck it in the Sefer Chassidim. There's another possibility, and that is that his students, after he finished his book, saw the Rambam and said, wow, that's really good. Let's put this in the Sefer Chassidim as well, because Sefer Chassidim is a book which deals with, among other things, tshuva, and deals with inner worlds of people, and deals with how a person should behave. And they said, no, this is really good, and let's put this in as well, which I consider to be most likely. From the little research I did find that his students did put things in, and not everything was from his hand, and it seems to me quite unlikely, again, just given the time frame over here, it would really be extraordinary that if the Rambam's writing spread so quickly and so far, again, from Egypt all the way to Germany, and then during his lifetime, are published or already plagiarized. That's not nice to say. There was a completely different sense of what I would call plagiarism in those days. People liked ideas. They put them in, and they did not always put them by name. But over here, it's really interesting. And as I said, it's almost exactly the same. He starts off, this is in Sefer Chassidim, Siman Kaf, and he starts off with the same first chapter as the Rambam, which we didn't learn, Kol Mitzvah Shebetorah, and so on. And then he gets to Eizu Tshuva Gemura, which is, again, almost word for word, in around the fourth line or so, is that Mahi Atshuva, She'ezov Achotei Et Cheto, V'yisim Machshavato Hara'a, he added in a word there that we did not see in the Rambam, he gets the evil thoughts from his mind, Milibo, V'gmur Bilibo She'lo Yaseh Od, She'nema Yazov Ish, She'yazov, it's a little stronger than the Rambam actually wrote. Person should completely reject Alarishonot, his original sins, as it says, and the person should say, Ani me'id alai, I accept upon myself as a witness, Hayodea Kol Talumot, he who knows all secrets, Shlo Shuv Bezech Achet Lolam, that I will never return to this sin again. So therefore, the sense that some of you had that you're talking about a vow, the Sefer Chassidim read that into the Rambam. So as I said, 90-something percent of this whole section is word for word of the Rambam. Here is the biggest difference, where he doesn't just quote, oh, and then the knower of all secrets will attest, rather the penitent or the Baal Tshuva will call upon the knower of all secrets to attest, essentially saying, I accept upon myself a vow that I will not return to this sin again. Either it's worse or it's better. Yeah. Incidentally, there were anti-Semites who did not like Kol Nidre. They say, they see the Jews, they break their word every year on Yom Kippur. They really, any Jew could break anything they want because they have Kol Nidre. They just all cancel for themselves all obligations. So I'd like to take a look at source number 10. It's Rav Yaakov Luberbaum, whose name may not be that familiar to you. He wrote another book that those who sit in yeshiva will be more familiar with. It's known as the Nitivot or the Nesivos. And much of Chosha Mishpat, you have the arguments between the Ktzos and the Netzivos, or the Ktzot and the Netivot. So this is the Netivot. He wrote also something called Nachlat Yaakov. And over here, he cites this Rambam, and he says something which I think has a great deal of profundity to it. Rambam Hilchot Shuva Perek Bet Halacha Bet, V'zelo Shano, Ad She'ilov Yodea Talamot Shalei Yashuv Od L'zeh HaChet Klal, V'tamuhu Kulam Alzeh. And he says, everyone is perturbed by this. Everyone, which means this is the question that everyone asks. Because essentially, that line is not in the Gemara. So when the Rambam over here, more often than not, the Rambam restates what we already have in older sources, where does he get this line from that God needs to testify? V'tamu kulam alzeh, and he says, look at Lecha Mishnah. Lecha Mishnah was the one who said most strongly, but this takes away for real, halo habichirach of shit. Ulafin aniyat da'ati, and it seems to me, or more literally, in my humble opinion, nira pashut. This really is quite simple. Ki adam mikodem aso avira, hu shav bivchirato l'tov o l'ra. Before a person ever sinned, the choices that stand in front of them are they can go in this path or this path, this direction, they can choose to do something one way or the other. Aval, acharei soto achet, shura alav ruach tuma, but sin creates a stain, and that stain impacts the decision the next time. Now, of course, what he's referring to, we'll come back to this in a moment, but of course what he's referring to is source 11. which is a comment on the Mishnah that we had quoted earlier. The Mishnah was Echtav Ashuv, Echtav Ashuv. Person says, I'm going to sin, and then I'll return, I'm sinning, I'll return. Trei Zimni Lama. The Gemara asks, why does it say twice? Kid Rav Huna Amar Rav. This follows the opinion that Rav Huna taught in the name of Rav. Dam Rav Huna Amar Rav. Kevan She'avar Adam Aveira V'Shanaba. Once a person sinned and then repeated it, Hutralo. It's now allowed to them. Hutralo Sakadaitech? Do you really mean to say that now it's allowed? Elena Asitlo Keheter. Now, it's to them, it's seen as it's allowed. So what he's referring to is the inner struggle that a person may have prior to having sinned the first time. Whatever the sin of choice that you may have, what the Gemara is saying is, before a person sinned the first time, there is an inner struggle. A person was raised their whole life only to eat kosher. And the first time in their life they ate something non-kosher, there was most likely going to be a very strong struggle taking place inside. Yes, no, yes, no, I can, I shouldn't, it looks good, I can't, but it's not allowed, and I've never done it before, and I can't, and there's this whole back and forth going on. And then the person sins the first time. So what he's saying, and what the Nachlat Yaakov had said, was that sin the first time creates a stain. What the Gemara actually said is that after the person had done it the second time, there's no longer going to be a struggle the third time. Is that the struggle takes place initially, but once a person becomes a habitual sinner, as it were, so then the struggle is no longer there. And in fact, where he's going to with this is that what happens is that the Yetzer Tov disappears. The Yetzer Tov is not part of the equation anymore. Which means, again, before the first time, there was this yes, no, but now there's not even a question anymore. So if we go back to the Nachlat Yaakov, the way that he had phrased it is that sin itself creates a stain. Ulizeh gdola shebetshuvot ba'oto makom ba'oto ever ba'oto isha. And that's why it's so important, the example the Rambam gave in the first paragraph, a person goes back to the same situation, the same room, the same woman, the same everything, and didn't sin, because now, in a sense, a person is setting back the clock. Ulizeh amar she'ashuv kol kach, and here where it says a person needs to go back until the knower of all secrets can testify, pirish, shekfar sar hachet mida'ato, that the sin has been removed from their mind, ad shemekoach ha'aveira lo yashuv alav, that because of the first sin, this person will not get to the third sin. I'll explain in a second. Rakhu bivchira shaveh kimikodem, but rather, it's because of an equal Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov, like in the beginning. So before we go any further, let me explain to you what he said. He's saying is that when a person sins, the sin itself creates a stain, the sin creates possibilities. The sin creates a new way of judging the world, which means prior to the sin, this was something which was forbidden fruit, as it were, and now it's no longer forbidden. Why is it no longer forbidden? Because you've determined that this is allowed. So now that the forbidden fruit is allowed, it's just part of a person's reality, that this is something that they now do, and the struggle is gone. So he says, Tshuva needs to take us back to the point where the stain of the sin has been removed, or in a sense what you're doing is that the Yetzer Tov has now returned, and is part of the discussion. So I'll be a little bit more precise now. Let's say the example I gave you before. Person sinned one time, two times, three times, and then they find themselves in the same situation, and they don't sin. They don't sin the next 10 times, 20 times, and 20 years go by, and they don't sin. And then 21 years go by, and they sin again. What he's saying is that when they sin 21 years down the line, it's not because they sinned those two earlier times. Those two earlier times created a sense of permissibility where there was no longer a struggle. It was just part of that person's behavior. But what the tshuva had done is it returned the equilibrium that there now is once again a battle between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. And essentially what he's saying is that that's what tshuva is. Tshuva is to return a person. Again, just think how different this was from the Sfat Emet. Sfat Emet is, real tshuva is to bring a person back where his soul is a part of God's heavenly throne, where sin is an impossibility. And he's telling you that tshuva is to bring you back to a point where sin is a possibility, but not, I'm going to use a different word now, a probability, or not even stronger than a probability. Which means, why was it a probability? Because you've done it so many times. So once you've done it so many times, you're no longer struggling. Yeah, so now it becomes a possibility again, because now what you've done is you've set back the clock to the way that we were created, and we were created with the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. And he's saying that the problem is this Gemara. The problem is Rav Huna in the name of Rav. The problem is that he's saying is that once you've sinned a couple of times, now it's allowed. But it's not allowed. No, but it seems to you that it's allowed. Why does it seem to you that it's allowed? Because you've done it so many times. And you've done it so many times, so now the Yetzer Tov is no longer part of the equation. So he's saying is that, how far do I need to get back into tshuva? I need to get back into tshuva that this is something which is going to be now difficult for me to do. And before I continue any further in what he says over here, I just want to raise the question in terms of, I think, the average religious person who on Yom Kippur is quite sincere, and on Yom Kippur they say, I will not do this thing again. And it's possible that the first time the situation arises, a day, a week, a month after Yom Kippur, the same thing comes, it could be that there's a struggle again. Hold it, right? I said, I'm not going to do this again, and so on. And that, so it could be that that's exactly what he's talking about. Yom Kippur worked. The tshuva was sincere. Because now there is a hesitation before the person may end up sinning again. Which means my question about the recidivist, and therefore the tshuva doesn't work because God knows you're going to do it again, and therefore tshuva didn't work. He said, no, that's not what it means at all. It means that I need to take this back to the point, I need to bring God as a witness because I am so sincere I'm not going to do this again, but it's not a reflection of reality. For the Sfat Emet, that was a reflection of reality. I will never do this again. And only if you never do it again is this tshuva real. He's saying that's not the question if I ever do it again or not. The question is there a struggle anymore, or have I been poisoned by the sin? So what he's dealing with over here is a poison from the sin, again, which I think is quite interesting. And let's go read it again. What does it mean a person needs to return until the knower of all secrets testifies? Sar hachet midato. The sin is removed from their minds. Which means they will not sin again because they had sinned previously. It's that sin that they've done previously is not the thing which is simply allowing them to sin again. Kodim. Rather, at this point, the person may sin again because they have free choice. And that's also what the Gemara meant. It doesn't mean that you have to know, put yourself in a situation that you're going to be secluded with the same person. No one ever said the Baal Tshuva should put themselves deliberately in a situation. It doesn't mean that the person should ever think that if I was not in the same situation, I'm not a real Baal Tshuva. Rather, what he's saying is that if a person were in the same situation, in their inner mind right now, would sin be a guarantee, yes? Or now would there be a struggle again? That's also what's interesting over here, is that Rav Loberbaum is just so much more real with this concept in terms of people. And what he's saying is that the concept of tshuva is returning to a pre-sin state. Pre-sin state is not, really, by the way, it's a reflection of the past. That's part of what I want to note. It's a reflection of the past and not at all an expression of the future. Which means we don't know what's going to be in the future. What it's saying is that the future is no longer dictated by the mistakes that I've made. I've broken a cycle. It doesn't mean that I won't start a new cycle, but I've broken the previous cycle. Yeah. Good. I'm going to give you homework then. What I want to point out are a couple of things. One is the Yerushalmi in Source 12 is talking about what happens on Rosh Hashanah. Very, very end of the page, last four words. The Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ro'eh Et HaNolad? Why do I need to give the Beinoni 10 days of tshuva? God knows the future. Which is really interesting because this goes to my very point about God knowing the future. And it says, Lo, v'lo shemiya da'am rav simen b'shem b'shu ben Levi, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu dan at adam, ela b'shashu omed ba. That God judges the person at that moment. That God, again, you show me here saying deliberately, God does not use his knowledge of the future when he judges somebody. God judges somebody at that particular moment, not based upon the future. So again, I just want that to be really, really clear, really, really clear. I'm going to come to your homework in a second, but first I want to point out a couple. You know what? Your homework first. Source 13 is Rav Itzalom Petersburg. also known as Itzel Blazer, or better known as the student of Yisrael Salanter. The Or Yisrael, the Yisrael is Yisrael Salanter, in source 13. Your homework is to read the whole thing. That's your homework. Because there may be no one who, you said he had a background in psychology, apparently Yisrael Salanter did as well. And his understanding of the inner world, is actually phenomenal. But I don't know how much we're going to read and how much we're going to look at. He essentially comes to the same point that we saw in Rav Lorberbaum, the Nesivos. He comes to the same point, but there's a lot more over here. He goes and he explains, and it's not difficult Hebrew, which is why I don't feel bad about giving you to learn this or to read this. Let's look a little bit. In the beginning, he quotes the Rambam. Let's read a little bit with him. HaRambam beperek bet milchot tshuva katav v'zeloshono ma'ei tshuva hu's sheyazov v'chotei cheto v'yisiru machshevato v'gmor b'libo shelo yaseh od. I do want to note right now, v'yisiru mimachshevato. Part of tshuva is to remove the sin from your mind. That sin is no longer part of your inner world. That's fascinating because I think that's very much what we have just now learned. You need to get to the back to the point. The sin is not part of your self-definition. It's not part of who you are. That's not kosher, right? I can't do that. That's not something which is permitted. Prior, exactly the whole point was that sin created permissibility. No, that is not part of my inner world. So that just turn of phrase over there is actually real interesting because that may be exactly where the Rambam had wanted us to go with that. And if you noticed it was actually what he had referred to along the way. He continues and he says, "V'igmor b'libo shel yaseh od," then he'll decide he'll never do it again. So far, what do we have? Stopping what you're doing, getting it out of your thoughts, and deciding you'll never do it again. And similarly, a person should reject the past. And the knower of all secrets should testify he'll never do it again. According to our first impression, the sequence is not right. Because Yodea Ta'alamot should have been right after Yigmor B'libo Shel Yaseh Od. It's in the wrong place. Not clear? I see from the looks on your face, not clear. This is an important point. Let's read this again. Start from the beginning of that paragraph. Hu She'azov Chotei Cheto, the first thing is a person needs She'azov Chotei Cheto, present tense, stop doing what you're doing. The Yisir Machshavato, which is much more difficult than I think we gave credit for the first couple times around, that they should no longer be part of their inner world. V'igmor b'libo shel yaseh od, and now they accept towards the future. I won't do it again. Notice there hasn't really been, everything has been present and future. There's been no expression about the past. Quotes a verse, and then he says, V'chein, also, yidnachem al sha'avar. A person should regret the past. So that's regret of the past. Shenemar, and moreover, the knower of all secrets should testify he'll never do it again. So what's his problem with the sequence? That should have followed the person's determination. A person should decide, I'll never do this again, and then call upon God to testify. Why is it in the wrong place? Now that happens to be a very good point. Those of you who don't know or don't feel, that's a very good point. The Rambam writes in a really logical way. Why is he going back and forth? Why is he talking about the present, then talking about the future, and then talking about the past, and then going back to the future? So essentially what he's going to say over here is that this testimony, or person taking God in testimony, he's saying that's more of an expression of the regret than it is an expression of the future. And he goes on to say along the way that there are many people who can't call upon God to testify because they don't really regret what they've done. Which means that if you really regret what you've done, then you'll never do it again. And he's saying the Rambam's actually saying something profound over here. This is actually all about a rejection of the past. The person who doesn't reject the past then is going to be on the fence a little bit. Okay, I hope I don't get punished. I mean, that's as far as Yom Kippur is going to go. God, please don't punish me. And he's saying, no, total rejection of the past is what's going to lead a person to get to this point of Ya'idol Ovidei Talamot. He also then goes into a really interesting discussion along the way, and he says that there's different types of knowledge of the future. He goes, there's of course the divine secrets, that God knows the secrets of that man doesn't know. But then he says there's also predictability, that somebody can watch and say, oh, this person, okay, they were on a trajectory. We're not surprised at all that they got themselves into this situation. So what he's saying is that a person needs to break the trajectory. A person needs to get to the point that sin was not the logical conclusion of where they were up to, which means a person could sin because that's, of course, the next thing that's going to happen because of the direction they've been going in. And he's saying over here is, again, it's rejection of the past. It's the degree that a person rejects the past is really what tshuva is going to be. Tshuva is going to be this charata. It's going to be this rejection of what I've done. But he says, until I get to the point that tshuva is not the logical thing that of course is going to take place afterwards. And he's saying is I don't necessarily have to get to the place of God, of God's knowledge of the future because God is God, but rather it's a question of predictability. It's a question of what kind of odds are you going to get in Vegas that this person's going to sin again, right? If it's 2-1 odds, right, you know, it's going to be overwhelming. Yeah, of course this person is going to sin again. So then that's not really tshuva. Tshuva is a person got back to the point that, again, at least where there's a struggle over here, but he's saying it's that a person needs to get back to the point that they have a chance of winning that struggle. So this, what was the problem that we started with today? The problem we started with is that we noticed a couple of times that we are calling upon heaven and earth, calling upon testifying. We move to the laws of tshuva in the Rambam. We find that a very similar phrase, that tshuva is not till a person gets to the point that God testifies. We noted along the way that the Lecha Mishnah questioned on that. They say, what are you talking about? If that's the case, the person has lost all free choice. We then saw the Sfat Emet is wonderful. The objective is to lose free choice. Once you've lost free choice, then you can be a perfect tzaddik. And that's what the tzaddikim are, the all kinds of people who no longer have free choice, or at least the Sfat Emet wants to imagine that's the case. But then along the way, we found others, this other voice or voices along the way that really were quite interesting. The Beit HaLevi, by the way, goes in the same direction as well. And what we find in Nachal Yaakov, the Beit HaLevi, and the Or Yisrael, and all of them go into a different direction, and that is that sin itself impacts upon the human being. Sin itself creates a stain. Sin itself changes the possibilities that a person sees in front of them. And what tshuva needs to do is to undo the impact of sin. Tshuva needs to take me back to the moment before sin. It doesn't need to turn me into an angel that no longer can possibly sin, but it needs to take me back to the point that if there is recidivism, if the person comes back and sins along the way, is it because it was the logical conclusion because they sinned 10 times before this point? So yeah, of course they sinned the 11th time. Or is it that a new struggle took place? And he says, well, if a person now underwent a new struggle and failed, but a person underwent a new struggle, that means that tshuva was tshuva. That was absolute tshuva. And I'll just point out, you know, when we started the Rambam, we stopped at some point, and it's, if we look back in Halacha Gimel in the Rambam, at the end of source number 6, Kol amit vadeh bedvarim v'lo gamar b'libo la'azov harei zedom l'tov v'sheret v'yado. The person said, I'll never do it again. They said vidui, but they didn't decide that they're never going to do it again. That's like going into the mikvah, holding on to something which isn't kosher, as it were. But notice, the Rambam here didn't say anybody who says vidui and at some point in their life comes back and sins again, it was no good retroactively. That's not what he said. He said what tshuva is, person needs to say vidui and have decided they're never going to do it again. That's all. Didn't say that. Again, it's not success-oriented. It's present tense. God judges us where we are right now. That's what Ushami said. That seems to be what the Rambam is saying as well. What we need to do is not just stop sinning. What we need to do is to stop the impact that the sin had upon us. That's really, I think, the lesson that we learned today. If down the line a person comes back and makes the same mistake again, if it's the same mistake based upon a new struggle, that's not the same mistake. That's a new mistake. But you say it looks just like the same mistake. No, that's a new struggle. And that's the point, is that we need to take ourselves back before we sinned the first time and before there was a struggle between the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. The problem with sin is that every single time we sin, we quiet the Yetzer Tov more and more to the point that it doesn't even exist. And the part of tshuva is to bring the Yetzer Tov back into the discussion and at least create a world where there's an even playing field. Tshuva is to get back to the point of an even playing field, and at that point, God purifies the past, God erases the past, and says, okay, now we can start all over again. Gemar chatima tova.